Welcome back to Administrative Static. Mark Chenoweth, John Vecchione, Janine Yunus with you. And we are once again joined by our esteemed colleague, Shang Li, litigation counsel here at NCLA. Shang, you just keep winning. And, you know, it's lovely to see. We had this case against the Department of Education, another agency you like to beat up on, where the Department of Education was engaged in basically national origin discrimination. Is that an appropriate way to describe it?
Pretty much. We won the case really a year ago, but it kind of lingered just because the department had to go back to the drawing board and rewrite some rules because of it. And finally, they agreed to hand over some money to us because they kind of conceded that their argument in defense of the rule was unjustifiable.
Why don't you describe, because we haven't talked about this in a while, what exactly was the case about?
Yeah, that's right. So sorry about that. This case is about the Fulbright Hayes Fellowship to study abroad. So what it is it's in 1961, during the Cold War, Congress passed a program to incentivize students, American PhD students, to go overseas, do research in a foreign language so they can come back and teach, you know, all the new State Department and CIA and all those folks, you know, cross-cultural languages and skills.
Named after Senator Fulbright of Arkansas.
That's right.
Arkansas, as we say, where I come from.
And so what the relevant statutory language says, this is supposed to be to promote modern foreign language training, you know, so you can't learn Aramaic, I guess. But you go somewhere else, you study for a
they
year.
They still speak Aramaic on that Iraqi-Iranian border, but go ahead.
Well, and in the Passion of the Christ movie.
Yeah, exactly.
So you do that, and then you come back, and students have been applying for a long time. You know, just for inflation, these go for like $30,000 to $50,000. So, you know, and they're quite competitive and prestigious. So for a long time, the Department of Education has promulgated regulations about, you know, how to evaluate an applicant. And some of these are like, do you get good grades? How good are your proposals? And one of these is, do you actually speak the foreign language or have skills in the foreign language that you're supposed to be doing research in? And this was like an important skill. It's worth, on the rubric, it was worth about 15 out of 100 points.
Right, because you want to give this scholarship money to people who are really good at the language, right?
Exactly.
So they're able to go and actually take full advantage of being in the country and digging into the archives there and all that kind of thing.
So for a long time, that was fine. It just had foreign language proficiency. We evaluated. And in 1998, the department came in and said, actually, what
under the Clinton administration.
Under the Clinton administration.
After the Cold War had ended.
So we're going to say
the unipolar moment.
We're going to redefine what foreign language is. We're going to say, actually, we evaluate your foreign language other than your native language. If it's your native language, you get 0 out of 15 points, which is basically a penalty that knocks you out of contention. And this means, you know, if you're and our clients were, you know, a Palestinian descent a student from who was born in Kuwait who wanted to study in Jordan. You know, she grew up speaking Arabic as a native language. Jordan speaks Arabic, therefore she's disqualified. We had, you know, students of Mexican descent who wanted to study in Spain.
Right.
You know, this kind of thing.
Do you want to say the client's name? Go ahead, John.
Before you do that, the statute says foreign language, right?
That's right.
And there's no exception if you come, and that means non-English.
Non-English. So we say, hey, foreign language means non-English language. Spanish is a non-English language. Arabic is a non-English language. You got to evaluate them fairly.
Right.
And the department, here's you know why we brought the case. The department invoked Chevron deference and said, well, foreign language really is ambiguous, isn't it? And we have interpreted foreign language to mean not foreign with respect to America, but foreign with respect to the applicant.
Which is crazy.
I suppose
it would be more interesting if it was like Navajo or an Indian tribe is only in the United States and nowhere else. We'd have an interesting case. This was outrageous.
Yes, it's a crazy argument, but this is what Chevron does.
It's almost as though the senior people in the Department of Education during the Clinton administration were saying, you know, there's too many foreigners getting these Fulbright scholarships. We need more native Americans to get these scholarships. That's what it feels like.
It feels like exactly that. The record from the 90s was not complete. We just have, you know, a rulemaking document, which they obviously didn't say that, but I can imagine that's sort of what they were thinking.
Or it could be they wanted people who study hard, and it was equity. They thought it was inequitable to let people. Who knows that?
Yes, these people who just came by their language proficiency naturally rather than by hard work.
So, Shang, how did we win the case a year ago?
So we won the case. The judge said, well, the judge kind of threw out the government's arguments. Like, even the judge said Chevron applies, which we didn't love. But you know, but even under Chevron, this argument was too crazy. That if you look at the statute was meant to just say, this is a Cold War statute. You're supposed to send people to other countries so that they can study the language of those countries.
Yeah. And be the best at it.
And be the best at it and teach Americans. And it's about how America is doing country-to-country diplomacy and espionage and that sort of thing. And so foreign has to be a country-based definition of foreign as opposed to a person-based.
I represented a guy who ran Voice of America during the Cold War at one point. The whole place was Hungarians and Russians and, you know, Germans. I mean, come on. But go on.
And so, you know, if you have a job interview, for instance, and, you know, I was born in China. So if you guys ask me in my job interview, hey, do you speak any foreign languages? And I show up and I say English. Right? Because English is foreign to me. I think you guys would all like. Exactly. Yeah.
So the judge
nice point.
Gave, he basically, instead of a preliminary injunction, if my memory serves, we said that, interesting point, I think, Department of Education had done this without anyone protesting for ages.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, and then, until Shang heard about it.
And as soon as we brought this case, the Justice Department looked at it, looked what they were doing and said, hello, Mr. Lee, we'd like to speak.
Yeah, they did not want to defend
this
in court.
They did not want to defend
so,
it.
So once the preliminary injunction was interesting in that it also vacated. We just asked for an injunction, but the judge vacated the regulation.
Nationwide,
until the department could write a new rule. And the department did eventually write a new rule. It took a few months. I think they were too busy forgiving student loans to do this. Because all they had to do is delete the words native language, and then it would have been fine. And then, but they still took like 6 or 7 months to do that. But once that happened, we went in and said, well, that's really nice, and you do provide, we agree this provides everybody, you know, with the relief they sought, but we think you're under the Equal Access to Justice Act, we are entitled to a bit of money.
Right.
And what that act does, it says, you know, if we represent a client who's, or plaintiffs who are you know, their net worth is under, what, $7 million,
yeah.
and they're the prevailing party, which all our guys are, and the government's argument is essentially like foundationless, completely unjustifiable. You can seek
or an unjustifiable, award fee. Exactly,
not substantially justified. Right. I think is the term.
And so, one of the things, and this is just anyone listening, practice tip: tell the government you're going to do this first, because they. It is my judgment now that they don't want a bunch of cases that go through whether they took unjustified positions. They don't like that unless they really felt this was strongly. And as we told, the way the Justice Department act, I don't think they felt strongly about their arguments.
They did not feel strongly about
their
arguments.
They were pretty quick to give us, you know, to negotiate with us and offer to negotiate us with us so that we, you know, we don't put, I guess, papers in front of a judge.
Right.
Which, by the way, is why you haven't said how much money
Wound up being $20,000, but I think partly
could have been a lot more, right? If they had fought it, right.
If they did, yeah, because we didn't think, you know, a few dollars here and there is not worth fighting for. Also, to be honest, like, you know, we may not have kept the best time records to justify our expenses.
Being a nonprofit,
exactly, we're not like billing in 6 minute increments here. Yeah.
So, but the interesting thing I think is, I wonder how many of these cases that the agency has something they want to do. And they do it. And they have lawyers at the agencies, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone has attorneys at all these agencies. They say, oh, yeah, we can do that. We can make these words mean this. We can mean words. But they must have no litigators at the agencies, because when it gets in the hands, this isn't the first time this has happened, right? There's other cases you've had. We've had the mootness problem, right? Where they always retreat.
I saw this at CPSC all the time, where the attorneys at the agency would bless something, and I would see it. They'd come brief my commission on it. I'd say, "You've got to be kidding me! That's your legal position." I said, "That's a slam dunk. You're going to lose that in court if anybody sues you over this." So, yeah, they're not always the best litigation strategist types at these agencies.
On this, I'm not too sure. In 1998, when the native language regulation was enacted, that was sort of from the heyday of Chevron.
That's a good point.
That everybody could have thought, hey, we could get away with this. There's no limit. This was even before Meade put a limit on Chevron.
That's true. Good point.
So everybody could have thought, you know, the sky's the limit and we can define words to mean whatever we want.
Well, this gets back to what Roman Martinez said when he was here for our luncheon law on Chevron deference. You know, when he was in the Solicitor General's office, regularly he would encounter agencies who weren't asking themselves the question, what does the statute require here? But we're asking themselves the question, what does Chevron deference allow us to get away with saying that the statute says here? Which hopefully we're in the final days of that sort of agency thinking, and Chevron will be overthrown. this is a great example of the kind of violation of civil liberties that happened under the 40 years of Chevron's problematic governing of regulatory law.
And I think our clients didn't get the Fulbright scholarships.
Well, different outcomes. So they all applied and got rejected based on this penalty.
Right.
One of them, then after this was after we won, essentially, they, you know, two of them reapplied again. One got it, one didn't. The third kind of aged out, who's so close to graduating that it didn't make sense for him to apply,
But still, terrible outcome. Yeah. And thank God we have these people who bring these cases, even when it doesn't benefit them in the end.
No, absolutely. So what's the status of this now? Is the check arrived, or that's the last step?
I sent the transfer document to the government lawyer yesterday. So I guess they have to go through their process, and then eventually we'll see the check at some point.
And we have to say he's been very cooperative.
He has been.
So the takeaway here is, if you discover something that the government's been doing wrong for 20 plus years, and you're 100% in the right, and even the government at first glance looks at it, the DOJ looks at it and says, we're not going to defend that. That's that's pretty indefensible. It's still going to take you a year to win and another year to get attorney fees from the government.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So, congratulations, Shang. A great result for our clients and for every future applicant to the Fulbright program. They're not going to have this native language penalty there against them. So that's why this is public interest legal work. It's not just for the benefit of our clients. It's a benefit for the larger society as well. So congratulations to you.
Thank you.